Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Welcome to Hoovering, the podcast about eating. I'm Jessica Fostercue. Here I'm joined by an interesting soul for snacks and sometimes full-blown banquets. We share conversation and confessions, not just about food, but about gobbling it up, or if you will, hoovering.
Hello, lush ones. That's January done for another year then. Thank you and goodbye, you twat. February's here and so is a fresh batch of fiercely brilliant Hoovering guests. Starting right now with a cooking lady whose online recipes have had me obsessed for months. They're all so glorious and in my view and my mouth, she has a really amazing take on flavour. Without ever feeling like she's tried too hard or made her shit all wacky. It all just tastes so good. It's Zena Kamgang. You might know her as Zena's Kitchen or from her work for Mop Kitchen. Before we get cracking, I want to shout out to my patrons. Thank you so much if you stuck with me through what's already been such a weird, scary money time. I am beyond grateful. Also, welcome if you're a new one. Without Patreon, Hoovering would be done for, basically, let alone getting better all the time. It's our lifeblood. Not to sound overly dramatic, but it is. And we've made it so flipping good on there now. From as little as £2 a month, you get stuff like loads of totally exclusive content. For example, the Hoovering's fifth birthday special party episode with a whole bunch of guests eating a Bake Off star-made special cake with my face on it. That is going out any day now, and it's just initially for patrons. There are great recipes from guests, discounts to live shows, and even early and ad-free access to each and every Hoovering episode. If you've got any spare dosh, please can I implore you to consider getting on board? Go to patreon.com/thehooveringpod. I also need to invite you to some live stuff. In February, I'm at the Leicester Comedy Festival. I'm doing a Hoovering Live on the 18th in the afternoon with the mind-glowingly fun guests Glenn Moore and Amy Gledhill. I know, only have guests with glut in the name this year. We'll eat so much and laugh so much. Also, my show Wench has been extended thanks to it all selling out all the time. We're filming it in Bristol on the 29th of March, but that has sold out. Your last ever chances to see it now are in London. It's at the Just for Laughs Festival at the O2 on the 4th of March at 6 o'clock. And then I'm back at the Soho Theatre, and I mean it, I'm never ever doing it live again after these dates. 8th, 9th, 10th and 11th of March. I would love to have you there. Tickets for all those exciting things are available via my website, jessicafostercue.com. Okay, let's Hoover. You are going to love this. It's funny, cheerful, revelatory, and she just gets it. She gets eating. So there's some sweet hacks and tips in here too. We met in the studio and I brought us lunch, which I'd made us from a few of her delish recipes.
I've made your recipe of sun-dried tomato pesto pasta salad. That is fun to say. with orzo, which I haven't had for ages and I love. So good.
So good.
Yeah, so I made it last night and I love aubergine. I'm afraid the only missing ingredient is courgettes.
That's okay.
They were stolen by my partner for another recipe. Yeah, that's bad, isn't it, when that happens? But what can you do? And I put, there's loads of basil.
I love basil.
Spinach. Those pointy red peppers that were specified. And I've never made my own sun-dried tomato pesto, and that was fun.
Fun?
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm in a piece of piss. It's so easy,
it's
right?
It's so easy.
Yeah. And then that's like, well, that's just there then for the week.
Exactly.
In a jar in the fridge.
Sorted. Cover
and I feel so adult and chefy if I've made my own pesto.
I love that. And also, you nailed this, by the way.
Oh, did I?
Yeah, it tastes really good. Tastes like I remember.
Thanks.
All those however many, months ago.
Yeah.
Tastes very good.
That you invented it. Mm. Get in. Do you know why I feel especially badass? Because the place that I bought the sun-dried tomatoes from, next to the jar of sun-dried tomatoes, was a jar of sun-dried tomato pesto. And I can't quite tell you that the internal machinations that it took for me not to go, just buy the ready-made pesto, you busy bitch. And I was like, no, make it.
I'm glad you did.
Thank you.
But to be fair, it would work. I've made it myself with shop-bought pesto because it's not every day make your own pesto.
Sometimes days you just don't have the time. Must. Yeah.
So, you know.
But having said that, it's a case of chopping some things, putting them in a whizzer and whizzing them into it. I mean, it's not like, it's not, there aren't intense technical skills required for that bit. It's just knowing what to put in there. And you have nailed that bit.
Thank you.
Going in for a big chomp.
Same. I've been going in.
Mm. I did spoon a few bits in straight after I'd made it, but it's actually lovely cold, isn't it?
Mm.
Oh, I fucking love a big juicy aubergine.
Me too. I used to hate them though.
Did you?
Like, with a passion.
Talk to me.
With a passion. I don't think I started liking aubergines until maybe like 3 years ago.
Really?
But that is because I never properly cooked an aubergine.
I have ruined several aubergines.
It's really easy to do. And I think it's actually when you undercook them, because you know they get like that weird sort of rubbery, like, they feel like a shoe.
They sometimes, yes, like a shoe.
Like a shoe. Yeah.
So well put, like an orthopedic shoe.
Yeah.
Or they make me think of that stuff that in the olden days they'd put in on the floor of attics to insulate them a bit. It's probably a bit asbestosy, that kind of like dense sponge.
Spongy, yeah. Mm. Exactly that.
Yeah.
But when you take it long enough and it gets like nice and mushy and like juicy.
Yeah.
My favourite thing.
I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, because you are the cooking person, not me. I'm the clown. But is it also a bit about not being too shy with whatever fat you're using? Because like, oil generally, because I know like everyone's big into their air fryer at the moment, but I feel like there are some things, aubergine included, that need to be, potatoes as well, like roast potatoes.
Yeah.
Like, don't dehydrate that.
No.
She needs to be juicy.
She needs to be juicy.
Yeah.
But I do think, so like a potato will, for me, always need fat.
Yeah.
Because it will never be juicy or crispy or do any of the fun things that you want it to do without it. Aubergine, on the other hand, I'd actually say that it depends on how you prepare it.
Right.
So for example, if you're doing like a whole roasted aubergine where it gets super juicy and jammy, because it has such a high moisture content, it will just automatically be juicy, but it's like that watery juiciness. So what it needs more than anything is like proper seasoning versus that. Whereas if you're like searing it or you're sort of cutting it into those little sort of chunks, that's where you want to get like loads of oil in there.
Great.
And infuse that with those aromatics and it's delicious.
Your recipes are fit. They're so good. I met you on the internet and was like, yum. Oh my God, look at that. Yum. Every single one looks so fit. And
I've made some
and they're all lush. But also, I think the thing that blows me away, and maybe this is just a sign of the times, is you are prolific. You are releasing stuff into the internet all the time. How? And I think by that question, I mean, what is your trajectory into this work? And like, was it just passion? Did you go to Chef University? Have you always been into cooking and eating and food?
Yeah. I have. So let me try and answer these. So yes, I have always loved food.
That's my speciality, by the way, is 9 questions in one. Take your time.
And I will answer all of them.
Right.
So have always loved food. I think I started cooking when I was like 7.
Yeah.
And I will always remember the first thing I ever made, which isn't real cooking. I don't know if you guys remember those Tom and Jerry cupcakes with like those paper stickers on the top.
Oh yeah,
that
amazing.
Was my jam, and I thought I was like a chef. And then I sort of graduated from that. But I don't think I got any good at cooking until I was about 17. So it was like a lot of years of really bad.
That's pretty
food.
Young to get good at cooking.
I mean, yes, but also when you've been cooking for that point over a decade, it's a bit awkward that it took you that long to get there. But again, I was a child, so it's fine.
Fair enough, yeah.
Never went to sort of chefing university, chefing school.
I don't know, that exists. I think I've made it up anyway, but you've got
school,
the gist.
It does.
Oh, okay, there we go.
All formal training in a restaurant. Never did that. Okay. I'm just like a massive nerd and I love food. And I just watched a lot of food TV. Shout out Jamie Oliver, shout out Nigella, shout out every single Food Network chef ever.
Great.
Because they taught me so much. And it was always just a passion. Like it was never, the goal was never to make it full time, to make it what I do. Mm-hmm. I think I only started posting food on social media because everyone was bored of seeing food on my personal page.
Right.
They just didn't want it. So I was like at a weird sort of intersection in my life where I'd been living in Cape Town and I moved back to London and I was going to then go and do my master's. And I had this sort of like 2 month or just under 2 month period where I was like, oh, what do I do with my time? And I decided, I was like, well, I might as well just start posting food on Instagram. And so what started as a sort of passion project still is a passion project, but it's taking over a little bit more.
Yeah, I was gonna
spend a lot of time on it.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
And you do stuff with Mob Kitchen, is that right? I've spoken to them before.
So I formerly was a food producer
at
Mob. So I was there full time doing food content creation things and recipe videos and all that fun stuff. And I loved it and it was great. But then I left Mob at, I think it was the end of October of last year. I think it was just the right time to do that. So I'm still there kind of on a freelance basis, on a fixed term project. I'm now not chefing. I'm working on their content strategy because that's a whole other thing.
But
I still get to do all my creative cooking on my channels. So it's all good.
Oh my God, I love it. What an amazing thorough answer. I really enjoyed it. I'm guessing you have to be really organized.
Yes, which is funny because I feel like, so I'm 29. Mm-hmm. I feel like my social media indicates that I'm very organized.
Yeah.
And I am, but that's like a recent development.
Oh, nice.
I think that like until about...
What happened first, liking aubergines or becoming organized?
Liking aubergines.
Okay, phew. Maybe the things aren't coincidence.
I don't think it was until like, I've been doing food things probably, I've had a food social media for 5 years. I've been doing it seriously maybe for about a year.
Yeah.
But I only really started planning my content and organizing my content about 3 months ago, 2 months ago. It used to be very much like, ooh, I fancy posting this and that's what I would do. But now I have a whole schedule, balance, I do all those things. But it took me a while.
Oh, I'm in awe. There are comedians who work like that and I am in awe of them. But I have to have something occur to me to make comedy out of it. I can't be like, today, you're making a funny story. Luckily, recently, I was trying to write a joke that involved a Bowden tankini and Googling it to check it was a thing, to like take the piss out of my own middle-agedness. I Googled it. It was a thing. 5 minutes later, I'd bought a Bowden tankini, which was shameful enough, only to have getting bullied for that. Next day, I had a look. Well, I thought, I'll get a screen grab of the tankini and tell the friend off who's bullying me and go, look how nice it is, actually. Turned out I just bought the pants.
Oh.
So that's what's happened to me most recently, that I have to wait for things like that to happen to me to create content. Luckily, the pants have arrived, actually, and I am organised enough to think and modern enough to think, don't open that, open it on social media.
There you go.
Finish the journey you began.
There you go.
If you're going to expose yourself as that sort of twit, make sure you've satisfy people with a conclusion to that tale.
Always do it for the content.
I think it's interesting, isn't it? Not just planning like sort of existing as someone who's putting amazing recipes into the world and stuff like that, but I think I really like planning.
I've been having lots of honest conversations with myself, I think, about why I think I might be a bit obsessed with planning what I'm going to eat in the course of a week.
I think so many people are.
Yeah. I wonder, because there are times where, I mean, I know it's the age old thing of being like, you know, you're in the middle of dinner and you'll be talking about what you're going to do for breakfast, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But I'll clock myself with my missus sometimes at home, genuinely eating a meal and thinking, I want to ask whether if she's going to cook tomorrow, she can make sure she uses those sweet potatoes. But it's, I know it's psychotic to ask that while we're still eating this meal. Like, I feel like part of me should be able to stop and eat, enjoy what you're having. Not like, I feel like I'm never not five meals ahead.
Mm.
And I'm trying to work out whether it's, I mean, I sell it, I think, as the most acceptable version of things, which is a real hatred of food waste. But I think what's really going on is, like, control. Let's be honest.
And a mild obsession.
A bit of obsession control. And I think sometimes I still get this, like, especially if I know, like, I'm going to be going somewhere where I'm not in control of what I'll be eating and when I'll be eating, which happens. That's life and work.
Mm.
I get a little bit panic. I'm going to get hungry and not have enough. Not that I've ever been deprived by anyone on purpose, but I think I spent lots of teenage years and 20s performatively eating less than I really wanted in public. Did you?
And so funny that you say this. I think to the first point about sort of constantly worrying about your next meal and wondering, are you going to be full enough? I don't know why, because I'm very blessed in that I never lacked as a child, but that was... We would, like, I could go on a really fun, like, play date or even be traveling and be doing all these cool things. I'm like, but where's the food? Like, how do I know that I'm going to be fed? What am I? It was a constant state of panic. And then, as a result of being then a really big kid and then trying to, you know, transition into teenage years, it was a lot of that where you just had sort of eating less than you wanted to because you were in public, or changing what you were eating, like going for the salad instead of the burger when all I wanted was the burger, but I'm going to eat the salad, a lot of that. And I think it wasn't until, I think, like a lot of people, I think it's more for women.
Doing this podcast, it's women more than men still by miles, right?
Just trying to like get into like a healthy relationship with food.
Yes.
Is great because of what I do, but also I'm always consuming food, whether physically, not physically, but like on social media, getting ideas. Like if anyone that lives in my brain, it's like at any one time I'm thinking of content, I'm thinking of not just food in terms of how it's going to taste, but how it's going to look. That's just always constantly just on my mind. And when I think of like planning ahead, like you, I'm thinking, I'm having a meal today. I'm thinking about what I'm going to film at the weekend because I film at the weekends.
Yeah. But
I can't plan it too rigidly because at the end of the day, it's always about what I feel like in the day. So in the week, I'll sort of have a compilation of ideas that come to me. And then the day before, so on the Friday, I'll be like, oh, what's really sort of grabbing my attention? And that's what I'll end up filming. So there's, it's like planning, but like with a hint of still being able to do what you want to do.
Totally.
Yeah.
It's like finding that balance, isn't it? Mm. Oh, that's amazing to hear. Yeah. And you forget, I suppose, when it's your work, like it's no hiding from it. It's... Like, well, everybody's got no hiding from it because everybody needs to eat every single day at several points. But also, I think part of that as well is like, if it's part of your work in any capacity, if you're feeding other people, if you're responsible for that, like, you've got a lot of plates spinning at any one time. And it takes, I think, a madly extraordinary amount of effort to be even 25% chill and intuitive and like, we'll just do, let's just see what it's like.
Mm.
I think I've had that highlighted, but I think because my partner is so like, you know, you'll go, what are you going to have for dinner? And they'll be like, oh, I'll think about it later. And you're like, what? What if the thing you want isn't there? But that obsession for me also means I kind of have to pop. I met up with a friend I hadn't seen for a couple of years yesterday briefly. And, just so I was saying goodbye, I said to my son, like, oh, actually, we just need to go and get some berries. And like, we need to get like three things in that Sainsbury's. And she was like, every time I see you, you're always popping to get just a few things. And I'm like, all right. But like most days there is like, I'm in the supermarket. It's same.
And like, I feel like there's two types of people. People who like, and I should be more like this, but I'm not. People who will make do with what they have, right?
Yeah.
At home, and you'll make it work. Doesn't really matter what the recipe is, you will make it work. Whereas for me, if I have all the veg in the world at home, but I decide I want to make a chicken curry.
Yeah.
I'm going to go out and get what I need to make that chicken curry. Yeah. The veg will wait. It's not obsessive, but it's...
We're focused. Yeah. We're goal focused. I think that's how like a CEO would call it. I think we're just like goal. Yeah, like we're start to finishes and goal focused. Okay, great. We've made it feminist. Mm. I mentioned an obsession with food waste. I've been having some really, I think, and I'm the only person in my house who cares about food waste. Yeah. So other people are constantly leaving things for me to finish. Mm. It's breakfast. I think breakfast is the one time, I think, where most people need to have some sort of routine, or they're like either a savoury person or a sweet person. And I can go, well, I'll just have that last piece of that chickpea pie with a phyllo pastry top.
Right.
If needs be, even at 9 a.m. But only if I'm hungry by then.
Fair. I have a new breakfast obsession.
Yes.
Which is just dry muesli. And I take out all the dried fruit and I just eat the dried muesli. And I have like two bowls of it. And I post it on my stories.
Okay.
And I got so many replies being like, cereal killer, but sure. But there's something about the really dry oats and nuts in the morning that just like...
You want that?
I just want it.
You like that?
I don't know why.
Amazing. Yeah. I love it that you've picked all the little bits of fruit out. Yeah. They can get out.
My sister eats them and... For her.
What a great team.
Yeah. Teamwork makes the dream work.
I've always found those bits of fruit annoying, but also what are they?
Dates. Okay,
so the that's why buy, they're
it's,
annoying.
It's not nice. No one
Lemon
has ever wanted
dates wreck
drunk.
Everything. Exactly. Poor vegans. It is in everything, isn't it? It's pretend sugar. Exactly. It's still sugar.
Exactly.
You've just marketed it as a wellness item.
Exactly.
Oh, I think dates are overrated.
They are. I agree.
Yeah, I'm sorry you got hate for that. It's interesting, isn't it? Each to their own a bit with that. I get people very upset with me on this podcast when I'm rude about savoury porridge. Not savoury porridge, I should say salted porridge, plain salted porridge. I have made a savoury porridge with like spices and like, and that was incredible. I don't know why that isn't more of a thing. I think that's going to have its time. You know, like things have their time. Mm. Like there were burritos and there's jackfruit and like, I don't know, everywhere's tacos now. Yep. There's loaded fries. Like everything has its time. Mm-hmm. I think savoury porridge is going to have its time.
I didn't even know it was a thing until right now.
Oh.
Genuinely.
So Andy Oliver told me about it.
Okay.
So that makes it cool as shit straight off the bat. Yeah, I mean, basically, oh God, I can't remember the rest of it. I'm going to find one and link it to this in the notes of this podcast. But yeah, I made one for a Patreon thing. Turmeric, those kind of like, it wasn't heat spicy. It was like unctuous, spicy, earthy.
Yeah.
Smoky, earthy. Yeah. Like spinach through it. And then I think there might have been some like roasted crunchy chickpea business. Yeah.
No, that sounds really good.
Yeah. It's texturally a bit to get your head around, but as long as there's something crunchy to go with it.
Mm. That makes a lot of sense because I don't like porridge purely because it's mush. Like texturally, it doesn't do it for me. But that with the sort of crispy element sounds delightful.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I was so skeptical and I ended up being like, well, this is delicious. It still looked like shit, let's be clear, and that's important for you. I think you'd have to find something pretty to pop on the roof. This, what we're having today, this Orzo business, is like the most colourful thing I feel like I've eaten all winter. It's all love going that. On.
So many colours. I love eating the rainbow. It makes it so much more fun and healthy and nutritious.
I find that whole rainbow delish anyway.
Exactly.
It is.
Like, I love beige food, but I also just love all food.
This feels like maybe the most like springy or summery thing I've eaten for a while. Would you say you eat differently at different times of year?
Yes, really? I definitely eat different. We love talking about the weather, but I'm very reactive to temperature. So unlike most people, I first of all love the cold. I thrive in winter. Like I love a wintry, snowy, cold moment. And I love really heavy, comforting foods in winter, but with loads of vibrancy still, because I think that it can get so stodgy and heavy that for me in winter, I cook with loads more acid and citrus and loads of fresh herbs just to keep it still really nice and fresh. Because I think you can do indulgent and comforting, but also really fresh. And so even my winter recipes are heavier, but they are very zingy and vibrant. And then when it comes to summer, I get hot. I sweat all the time. And anything that I eat that will be conducive to more sweating, I will not eat.
So fine.
I think last year, one thing that I did on social media, I had loads of salads and whatever, but I also had a series, a no-cook pasta sauce series, where the concept was, as your pasta cooks, the sauce is like a non-cooked thing. So like, for example, there was like a creamy sun-dried tomato harissa situation where you just sort of throw in sun-dried tomatoes, mascarpone, cheese, harissa in a blender, and boom. Or like ricotta, lemon, parmesan. Really simple, fresh, easy. That's very much how I eat in the summer.
Yes. Love it.
Grandiosis.
Yeah, but what would you sound like if you said it now in a big boy voice?
Grandiosis.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hey, Wonderfuls. I'm interrupting my own podcast to share some of your brilliant responses that you've sent into the podcast when I asked you the question, have you ever eaten food meant for a pet, or has a pet ever eaten your food? We got so many messages. I really loved hearing your stories. We haven't got time to share them all. Some of my favourites. Right, this is the first time you're hearing this one. This is a voice note from Isabel in Manchester.
So our dog Sadie, she's really good around food. She doesn't really take anything unless she's given permission, which is really great. But it does mean we've become quite blasé about what we leave around the house at sort of dog height. Anyway, that's how we found out that our friend's greyhound Finn, he's got a real taste for Baileys.
That's amazing. Finn. Do you know what? I think that story makes me think that maybe people who believe in reincarnation are right. Do you know what I mean? Because you get the impression, don't you, that maybe Finn the Greyhound is somebody's Auntie Linda in the next life. Anyway, we also got this amazing message from Heather in North Wales. It says, in answer to your question, my cat once came home with a chicken breast with stuffing and covered in gravy that she'd stolen from a neighbour's Sunday roast. Cheeky titch. Cheeky titch, she's written. That's brilliant, isn't it? Not just any old scrap of scraggly old meat. She's gone for it. One with all the trimmings. Classic cat, actually, isn't it? To insist on it being part of the perfect whole meal. Lucy on Instagram. Oh, God, this is a big one, right? OK, buckle in. This one, it took me on a journey, OK? Right. Our greyhound, Lucky. Now, at this point, I'm interrupting Lucy's message to say, I'm not sure if that's the best name for this dog. Okay, our greyhound Lucky scoffed mince pies. Mince pies contain raisins, which are toxic for dogs. So this Christmas was overshadowed by him being hospitalised for 4 days on a trip to flush out his kidneys and him coming home with a stomach ulcer, spending the week between Christmas and New Year vomiting and pooing blood all over the living room floor. Fuck, she adds. Mince pies are now banned in our house forever. Yeah, I don't doubt it. I do need to make it really clear Lucky survived this incident. Lucky's fine. And actually, maybe the name Lucky is apt because Lucky made it through after what sounds like a fucking horrific reaction to a mince pie. Oh, my word. Well, and actually, I guess it depends on the dog as to how toxic those raisins and stuff like that are, because the last one here is from @Fergal29, who tells me that in their childhood, at one point, one Christmas, their dog ate half the undecorated Christmas cake. But how good is this? That year, her mum just sliced off the chewed side. A woman after my own heart, sliced off the chewed side and decorated the cake that year with a Santa on skis going down the slope. Oh, I love it. Waste not. Absolutely bloody waste not, want not there from @Fergal29's mum. They've added in brackets, in those days we didn't know that dried fruit was toxic to dogs. Luckily she was fine. Really nice. Glad I got that disclaimer. I don't want any stories about dead animals on this podcast. This is a lovely podcast, thank you very much. Wow, do you know what, I thought there'd be more people who'd eaten the animal food, and it turns out no, animals win at eating our food. They definitely eat more of our food than we eat of their food. Also, before I sign off from this little bit, I do also got a message from somebody saying that they wanted to know, after my Miracle Berries episode with Luke McQueen, which they really loved. Thank you for saying that. They said, what a cool experience to listen to two people having. Thank you. That's exactly what I was going for. They wanted to know whether I was still able to enjoy my Peruvian meal that evening. And do you know what? I wasn't, but it wasn't the Miracle Berries' fault. It was because I ordered a crap thing. I was so annoyed. I had a lovely Peruvian cocktail, but well, I can't remember what it was, but it tasted nice and it got me tipsy, lovely, but I had a gross dinner. We accidentally ordered this cauliflower thing that turned out to be an entire head of boiled watery cauliflower with, wait for it, like a thick sort of almost bitter savoury, wait for it, chocolate sauce all over it. And that we just sort of hacked sort of miserably away at that. So I almost wish the Miracle Berries were still distorting my flavour buds, actually, to be honest. Guys, you have excelled yourselves here. Plenty more responses to that question to giggle at in the next episode. Keep an eye on @TheHooveringPod on Instagram and Twitter, as new questions for you to answer are cropping up all the time. Right, let's return to the podcast.
Do you salt? Are you salt mouth or sugar tooth? I don't. Neither of those are phrases anyone uses.
I like that.
Yeah.
I'm a salt mouth.
Yeah, me too.
And I want a hoodie that says that. I'm a
salt tooth. Yeah,
salt tooth, for sure. Yeah. Always starter, main versus main dessert.
Me easy too.
All day.
Yeah, starters is my puddings.
Yeah.
And do you think there's anything that you believe should be eaten in a ritualistic way?
Let me give that some thought, because I'm very particular about a lot of things. So yes. Okay. I could have a whole podcast on this. Toast. I am weird. So my toast, I don't really eat toast very much. Whenever I have bread in the house, trying to be healthy, blah, blah, blah. But if I'm having white bread, like white bread toast, I will toast it until it's nice and brown. Butter goes on immediately when it's hot. So it melts in and almost gets like mushy, but crunchy at the bottom. Perfect. If I'm having brown bread toast, which I really do enjoy, I have to toast it, let it cool fully, and then I can put butter on it, because I want a distinct layer of sort of cold butter on cold toast, because when it melts into brown bread, I hate it.
Wow. That's
something quite specific.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. I love it when words like hate come out.
Oh, I mean it.
Yeah.
Like, I will not have a hot brown buttered toast. I can't. I mean, I can.
Mate, you're not going to catch me offering you it. I've heard you and I've accepted what you've said. God, that's interesting, isn't it? God, I go through phases with it. I'm quite fickle.
Yeah?
Yeah, I think kind of as a general rule, I run when you hear the pop of the toaster, like speed is of the essence. Mm. I want the butter on it pretty soon. But I think what's happened over the years is I use so much butter that you get your sinky innie business, but still a visible layer.
Best of both worlds.
Yeah, if you have a big enough shard on there, You get the sinky inny stuff, but then also still that...
That little bit.
Yeah, it doesn't... It can't be too much, otherwise you do gip. But there's something about that, like, millimetre of visible give of actual butter that is
so good. I also like your term, the sinky inny bit. I'm going to use that.
Yeah, I think that's a science.
It's a thing.
Yeah, phrase. I pulled that directly from GCSE chemistry, I think. Sinky inny bit. It's a funny one, isn't it? I don't think there's ever a bad time for toast, but I also go through long patches of not having it. I don't give many shits about the health side of it for me, but I just think actually it's maybe this is really boring. I feel like it boils back down to that bloody food waste thing. Whereas we get like a loaf of bread delivered every week. And on day one, everybody wants it.
Yep.
As soon as it arrives, cut the bum off. Eat that with some visible butter, but not toasted.
Yep.
But then by day two, everyone else wants soft bread, or like our household prefer like a, you know, from in a bag soft bread that lasts for way longer. But I'm the one chipping away at the increasingly solid brick, and then it just needs more and more toasting. But then there comes past a point of no return where actually it's gone so hard you don't really need much toasting. It's pretty arid.
I have a tip for you.
Yes.
Oh my God. If you take a loaf of bread that has gotten to the stage where only you and your household are eating it, it's a little stale, run it under a tap, like literally underwater, so it gets wet all over, like the outside, not the inside. Wrap it in foil, or don't, but then pop it into like a 180 oven for like 10 minutes. It comes out like super crisp on the outside, fluffy in the middle, like fresh bread.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Really?
Game changer, genuinely.
Oh my God, I think you've just changed my life. Thank you, mate.
But just don't tell your family so you can still get all the fresh bread and that's all yours.
Because the other classics are always like a bread and butter pudding. Mm-hmm. Who cares? What century are we in?
Yeah.
Although I'm sure you can get delicious modern versions. And my Auntie Barbara makes a lovely one. Or the other thing I sometimes do is whiz the prick up in the NutriBullet, get it in a plastic bag, freezer, and then you've got breadcrumbs for next time you're crumbing something with bread.
There you go.
Yeah, it took me ages to get that sentence out, didn't it? Stuck, much like a breadcrumb might.
Have you ever made a ribollita?
Never heard the word.
So that is, I want to say Tuscan, but I might be wrong. It's a Italian.
Mm.
It's kind of like a hearty stew where you use leftover bread and it sort of gets layered with like a vegetable heavy brothy situation that softens it up, and you sort of bake it all together, and it's a great way to make use of really stale bread as well.
That sounds incredible. So you'd kind of use it like you'd use a layer of pasta. It sounds like a bread lasagna.
Yeah.
What's it called again?
Ribollita.
Ribollita. Mm. Willita. incredible. Talk to me about eating growing up.
My mum cooked for us mainly. Mm. My dad here and there.
Siblings.
Sorry?
Have you got siblings?
I've got two younger sisters.
Sorry, I had a mouthful.
No, you're fine. two younger sisters. People often assume I'm an only child, which is mildly insulting because I don't know what that means. But no, I have...
I'm an only child, and I'm afraid it means shit sharer.
I'm not great at sharing, especially not food. If I share my food with you, I really love you.
Okay.
Because it goes against my instinct. But no, my mum was and is a great cook.
Great.
And she made great food. I always say that my mum's Nigerian, my dad's Cameroonian, we grew up here, but we were never a salt and pepper household. Uh-huh. Like my parents are African, so there was always a lot of seasoning involved. Not necessarily spice, but it was very flavorful food. So, actually, someone asked me this yesterday, I did a sort of ask me anything on my stories. I've never made a Sunday roast. We have never had a Sunday roast at our house. It's always like a chicken stew, Nigerian style, or like jollof rice or something that... to me was a little bit more spiceful. But I was also really picky as a kid.
Right.
I was annoying. I didn't, my mum would make all these really delicious, like she'd make like a soy glazed salmon. I'd be like, I just want chicken nuggets. And she would go through all these like fat, like
I can tell by the way you're saying it that you've come full circle though. Do you know what I mean?
Thing,
the amount of people I talk to who are like, oh my God, as a kid, I threw so much shade on such great food.
Honestly. My mum did great and I was not appreciative, but we've come a long way.
Yeah.
And now she gets to eat all my delicious food. So
I love it. Yay. Oh, that's nice. Yeah. We still live nearby and still eat together.
Oh, I live in her house.
Yes, please. So, just a modern way.
It was always, I think I made things unnecessarily difficult. Because again, like I said, it was never a problem. It was always just this weird, I'm just constantly thinking about my food and I want to know what is going to go into my mouth next. And when I didn't know, that was a problem. Like if I was at home and I had a school routine, whatever, fine. Yeah. But summer holidays, I don't know what I'm eating. What am I doing? Am I going to the park? Great. But then when am I going to have my sandwich? I don't know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
All this weird anxiety.
And was it, but did it start with like, I think sometimes I have also experienced that, but I wonder whether mine comes from a place of being like, as soon as I hit puberty, or even a bit before, because I was a big kid, I would wake up and be like, I'm going to try not to eat today. And that, I now know that's a disordered relationship with eating. But that desire to like kind of wake up and go, see how little you can eat today and maybe get thin. It just led to being obsessed with food all day. I look back on a lifetime, well, half a life, thank God, only spent on diets, kind of, you know, and you lose weight and you restrict and then you binge and whatever. And it's in this cycle, it's kind of, well, ultimately, definitively pointless cycle of misery. I look back at that and go, well, of course you're obsessed with food because you're obsessed with, it was a try to avoid it.
Yeah.
That meant I was like, where am I going to get it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But see, yours makes sense though.
Right.
I didn't have that. Yeah. I wasn't trying to restrict. I was eating what I wanted when I wanted. And
great.
I still wanted to know when that was going to be. It was.
It's a primal drive. Maybe it's just this prime. We are designed as humans to have that high up our priorities.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So maybe I was just, you know, more evolved than most as a child. Who
exactly.
Knows?
I think very advanced. Yeah, very advanced. I can say the same about my 7-year-old.
And well, not to get too deep, but I think my parents, and we've talked about this now that I'm an adult, especially my mum, I don't think when I grew up, they had as much of an understanding of nutrition. Mm-hmm. Like when I look back at how I ate as a child, so I was a kid who by the age of 5, I'd graduated from a McDonald's Happy Meal to a Big Mac. I was a 5-year-old Big Mac, large meal consumer.
Yeah,
and I went to McDonald's twice a week. Right. Every day after school, I had a giant, and I mean like the size of my face, glazed donut plus a packet of salt and vinegar crisps, the big ones. And that was just the norm.
Yep.
I didn't really want to eat my vegetables, therefore I didn't really eat vegetables. Yeah. I think that I was allowed to do so much because my parents didn't really get it. It wasn't until I was bigger and a bit too late. They were like, oh, wait, we might have messed up here because we've like bred some really unhealthy habits. So I think you're winning.
Feels anachronistic sometimes to be like all up on our parents for some of the stuff that was just. Also, they had this idea of when I was growing. I've got a decade on you, but when I was a kid, fat was the bad thing. Mm. We got everything had to be low fat. Now we know we really need fats in our diets, especially mixed with other types of nutrition. I think we're still learning why kids like crave carbs and like sugars like in the way that they do, and I don't think. But I am grateful that I've got a kid who will eat anything. Like, Lacey loves eating enough that, of course, he is always asking for an ice cream and always wants those things and often getting them. But he also, at least, he also gets his rainbow.
Good.
Across a week, I'm sure, as well. Especially if he's made it. That's been a new thing. Well, he's only old enough, I guess, to really properly help. But, like, at Christmas, I realised, well, you can chop stuff now. Like, this is amazing. It's like actual genuinely useful sous chef that can like chop stuff, run and get, knows what it is, you know, and can read. So you can go like, well, can you go and get me the plum cherry tomatoes in the fridge?
Right.
And like, and actually if he's had a hand in it, so on Saturday he, with my missus, made a vegetable lasagna. Mm. They had like 100 different veggies in it. Because he chopped them all, he was like, this is delicious. Like, well, this is it. You just need to
get them involved.
Yeah, play on their ego.
Yeah.
Quick fire questions.
Crisps or cake?
Crisps.
Tell me about a food that you won as a prize.
A giant, and I mean giant, it was like 3 kilos worth of Parmesan. It was like,
what?
Huge. Yeah.
Tell me, what competition was this?
It wasn't, well, I just had to go up and sort of do a demo and they gave me a giant sort of wedge of Parmesan. Yeah. It was actually really, I had to give it to a lot of people. It's too much. It also didn't fit. Like, you know how like you're, anyway.
Yeah.
This is now getting too long. Giant wedge of Parmesan.
Most futuristic thing you've ever eaten?
Ooh, I went to, I don't actually know what it was. I was at a Nigerian restaurant called Ikoyi in London. Mm. And it was some version of a seafood mousse situation. in a bowl. I didn't know what it was, but it was delicious. I couldn't recognize it. I couldn't tell you what meat it was. I couldn't tell you how it was cooked, but it was delicious. Mm. Yeah.
I want to go there.
Do. It's very good.
Oh, is it? What bit of London's it in?
Strand.
Oh!
180.
Oh my God. Yes, please. Is it no other option? Would you eat a person?
No.
Okay. That's quite a quick answer.
At that point, I'm ready to go to heaven. It's cool.
Okay.
It's fine.
Okay, yeah, okay, yeah, got it. And 5 second rule, yes or no?
Yes. Oh my God, like 20 seconds. It's fine.
Hangover, what are you having?
I don't drink.
Now it's time for the big end question.
Andrew Tate buys LinkedIn and creates the most annoying data-wielding cyber mega-weapon headed by the worst possible human mega-weapon. It's like water poisoning, except it uses the internet to do the poisoning to our hearts. It's the worst. Everyone starts becoming the absolute most shittest boys and or headhunted for jobs in recruitment. But luckily, it's agreed to go back and never had existed, this whole thing, but only if you, and weirdly it does have to be you, agree to do the taxes for 4,409 self-employed people with 91 jobs each, all whilst balancing up the top of a quite thin stick on a windy day. It sounds impossible, but you do it. You're a hero. Your reward is the adulation of all people for all time. So you've gone down in history as a goddess, right? Because you've saved us all from Andrew Tate's LinkedIn apocalypse.
Sure.
But your reward in the moment, and bear in mind you are starving because of being out, balancing up that stick all the time and doing all that maths. Right. Your reward in the moment is a feast of your dreams. This is a fantasy.
Okay. So I am starting off with some kind of pork and prawn wonton dumpling situation with lots and lots of chili oil, but also lots of black vinegar. That is course number one. Course number two, chicken wings. I would like some fried chicken wings tossed in a very spicy buffalo sauce with some blue cheese dressing on the side.
Yeah.
At this point, a little bit of a break. Okay. Just like a little... Yeah.
You can pop to the Maldives for all I care, babe.
Oh, there we go. Then I'm in the Maldives for 24 hours. Then we come back.
Okay.
Next up is pasta. My favorite, all-time favorite pasta is a tomato and basil pasta. So I will have that. Simple, easy, super delicious, lots of parmesan. Then maybe a steak.
Okay.
How's I love coming? A steak. Medium rare.
Okay.
With peppercorn sauce on the side. Actually, preferably a Hawksmoor steak. I had a good, really good one recently that changed my life. That was really good. I've only been once and it was very, very good. And then to finish, a strawberry tiramisu, because it's one of my favourite things ever.
Shut up, never heard of it.
Oh my God, I have a recipe. I will send you the recipe.
Thank you very much.
And I think that with that, my meal is done.
You've smashed it. You've absolutely smashed it. I'm so full, but now so hungry. That's amazing. Oh, mate, thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you for having me. It's been really fun.
Hoovering Podcast.
She's such a star. What a delight that one was. Follow her at Zena's Kitchen. Z-E-N-A-S Kitchen. One word. There are links to her channels on there where all her recipes live, basically, and I'm yet to find a dud. She's just brilliant. Come and see Hoovering live at the Leicester Comedy Festival on the 18th of February at 3 o'clock, when I'll be joined by Glenn Moore and Amy Gledhill. Yes, fucking please. And why not come in March to see the last ever, ever, ever performances of Wench in London at the Soho Theatre, 8th to the 11th of March. Come, come, come. Tickets to everything, as per, are on my website, jessicafosterq.com.
Follow us on social media at The Hoovering Pod. I'm on at Jessica Foster Q. Send us voice notes, pictures, WhatsApps to 07462 855271. Email us thehooveringpod@gmail.com. I'll be storing all your beautiful offerings up and discussing them in future episodes. Keep an eye on our social media for any specific questions and topics that we'll be asking you to contact us about. Links to everything interesting mentioned today are, as ever, in the podcast notes. Hoovering is presented and created by me, Jessica Foster Q. The music is by Jake Yap, and it was produced by Laura Grimshaw. Until in 2 weeks, happy Hoovering.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget?
Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love and be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.